Welcome to The Greek Current, a podcast by Halk and Kathimerini. I'm your host, Thanos Davelis. How can Washington best balance security interests in Europe and the Middle East while still prioritizing the Indo-Pacific? Expert Aaron Stein, who joins me today on our podcast, makes the case in a recent piece that the answer might be found in deepening the military partnership with Greece, one of Washington's most important regional allies, as well as the Republic of Cyprus. Specifically, the United States should lay the groundwork to expand the scope of the forces deployed in Greece and work with Athens to leverage Greece's strategic location for American interests in order to enhance security and stability in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. Aaron Stein is the chief content officer at Metamorphic Media and an expert on the region, arms control, and nonproliferation. Aaron, welcome back on The Greek Current.
Thanks for having me.
The Russian invasion of Ukraine has forced the Biden administration to spend considerable time thinking about European security. Washington is looking to balance security interests in Europe and the Middle East while still prioritizing, you know, the Indo-Pacific. Is this where Greece and Cyprus come into the picture?
Yeah, I think you're talking about the piece I wrote today for War on the Rocks, which is looking at the sort of geographic and geopolitical advantages of the expanded U.S.-Greek relationship, you know, the signing of the MDCA and the increase of the number of bases in Greece that the U.S. has access to. And quite honestly, the idea for the piece came to me right at the beginning of COVID. I was in a war game virtually, and we were looking at this problem. And we just kept looking at the viability of U.S. basing options outside the first threat ring of Iranian ballistic missiles. And so I just kept coming back to Cyprus and to Greece as potential options, along with Romania. And so the piece is about 2 years in the making, and the MDCA was fortuitous in that it made the piece more relevant.
What are some specific ways that the U.S. can work with Athens and Nicosia to creatively, you know, deploy and employ American and allied forces in order to enhance stability in the broader region here?
So in my brain, it's like, you can go from the Trump administration to the Biden administration, you know, two ideologically opposed administrations. And you can even go back into the Obama administration. But the theme is the same. It's that the sort of wars of choice in the Middle East, the invasion of Afghanistan, the invasion of Iraq, the subsequent occupation of both, needed to be moved on from. And they needed to be moved on from because the pressing challenges in the Indo-Pacific. And then as the Indo-Pacific became the dominant focal point of U.S. national security, the allocation of finite resources, both personnel and platforms, need to be shifted from central command elsewhere. Then we had the second Russian invasion of Ukraine. And so this issue became even sort of more poignant, which is if you have finite resources, where do you put them? And where do you put them in ways that advance U.S. national security? And I, again, you know, having sketched out this piece about 2 years ago before COVID, came back to the idea that you can leverage access, you know, like, we should be clear, this is access arrangements, leveraging access to geographically important places in Europe to have a broader reach outside of sort of the European area of operations. So you can think about Northern Africa and you can think about the Levant. There's all sorts of bureaucratic reasons why this is like difficult, but theoretically, Greece and Cyprus, to an extent, offer a number of advantages if you're just talking about distances from a lot of important places.
Can you expand on that last point? You know, what are you thinking in that regard?
Yeah. And so, like, you can, in theory, plus up forces or at least ability to deploy forces in Europe, for example. Right. And so you're allocating resources to the right place. Because if you're thinking about Indo-Pacific and Europe as the two top priorities for the United States, you can put them, or at least have access to put them, in the right places. But if you think creatively, and this is where you have to engage the host government, this is the point of the piece, in this case, Athens or Nicosia, you can sort of try and leverage the right place forces for things that are like technically out of the area in which they would cover. So you could use, like we have for the war in Syria, Cypriot territory or Greek territory to enable combat operations. And as we saw in the response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, assets that either overfly Greece, use Greek airspace, or had access arrangement with the Greeks, like in the case of carriers, can be used to support the air policing mission in places like Romania. And so it becomes a linchpin connecting the two seas, the Black Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, which is how the Russians think about naval operations in the area as well. The Russian presence in the Mediterranean is an extension of their Black Sea fleet. And so we could, we being the West, think about, you know, how best to hedge against their own activities that have really built up since 2010, but really began to be blown out with their participation in the Syrian civil war.
The Eastern Mediterranean, Aaron, as you point out in your piece, it sits at the seam between two American adversaries, Russia and Iran. How significant is the U.S. partnership with Greece and Cyprus then when it comes to checking the threat posed by malign actors such as Russia and Iran?
The word seam comes from the American bureaucracy and really this, like the combatant command arrangements of the U.S. military, right? It's like the seam, it's where EUCOM and CENTCOM come together, right there. It sits at the seam of actually three different combatant commands, which is AFRICOM, European Command, and Central Command. And so if you put the bureaucracy aside, or you decide to like tackle the bureaucracy, which is a task in and of itself, you can leverage forces in Europe for three different contingencies. And the Greeks and parts of the Arab world, and here I'm talking about Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and one step beyond the Arab world, the Israelis, already get along pretty well. They exercise together. And so like you can leverage stuff that's already happening to try and expand the conversation, you know, about these regional contingencies that could come up where the three seams meet. And, you know, I think that there's some logical things here. There would be stuff to pursue beyond this, but that's the point of having diplomats and thinking creatively about how to use finite forces in a world with many challenges.
I want to turn to the Middle East. This is an area where Greece has significantly improved and stepped up its diplomatic presence. You know, is this a unique opportunity for Athens to leverage its improved ties with the Arab world?
I think so. I mean, certainly on the defense side, what we have seen is typical bandwagoning behavior. I mean, the elephant in the room is Turkey, and that there's concerns, and there have been concerns throughout, you know, parts of the Arab world, also for obvious reasons in Greece and Cyprus, about, I would call it, unpredictable Turkish decision-making in terms of its foreign policy. You know, I think everybody in the region understands that Turkey is a large power, that it has to be dealt with, it has to be managed diplomatically, but it vacillates and it lurches from crisis to crisis. And so it's become very unpredictable in terms of how to respond to it. And so there's been typical bandwagoning behavior. And so the outcome of this has been those improved Greek defense ties, particularly with the UAE and with the Saudis. And you see this in the exercises of both navies and air forces. You have this similar problem set that's going on in the United States, which is how do we continue to manage those difficult partnerships in the Middle East by extending security guarantees in ways that conflict with national priorities on the Indo-Pacific and on Europe? And so how can we think creatively? And so I just, again, this was a piece that's been banging around in my brain for about 2 years, was can we leverage these evolving ties to include more partners in how we think about, you know, defense and partnerships in the Levant, in the Arabian Peninsula, and out to the Eastern Mediterranean.
You brought up, you know, how the elephant in the room is Turkey, and I want to turn to Turkey. Ankara has pointed to the updated and expanded MDCA between the United States and Greece as a threat. You know, why is there a heightened paranoia in Turkey around these developments?
Well, one is that I think it plays to domestic politics. And so there's a political incentive to sort of play up the boogeyman. It fits into the narrative that you see in Ankara is that the United States is somehow committed to keeping Turkey down for nebulous reasons because it wants to control, it's uncomfortable being out of control of Turkish decision making. Now, of course, this is ridiculous, but I think more broadly, what it signals is that historically, it's in the 1947 Truman Doctrine. It's right there in the speech. You tie the two countries together. You have balance between the two countries in terms of American support on the military side and the economic side, but really on the military side. And so that one side doesn't gain a competitive advantage over the other. That has been policy in the United States. I would say it's still policy in the United States. But independent of that, you've had actions in Ankara, particularly purchasing the S-400. And the purchase of the S-400 has led to the imposition of an arms embargo and sanctions. And the arms embargo has hindered the ability of the Turkish Air Force to modernize. While at the same time, that unpredictable foreign policy has led regional actors to bandwagon against them, talking about Greece, talking about France, talking about including into the Levant, as I was talking about earlier. And you're at the front end of a Greece rearmament period. And the Greek rearmament includes significant purchases of American equipment, upgraded F-16s, and the F-35. And so you see a lot of chatter in the Turkish defense community about losing their qualitative edge vis-a-vis the Greek Air Force, the Hellenic Air Force, for these frequent dogfights that we see in the Aegean every summer. I call them the wonderful waste of jet fuel. And so I think it feeds this overall paranoia that's banging around in Turkish domestic politics. And finally, the Russian invasion of 2014, particularly as it comes to Cyprus, is often lost in terms of how this issue is framed. But you have a strain of American thinker. I don't necessarily agree with this, but it is definitely something that influences policy. And I know it was poignant during the Trump administration, and I think continues as well, which is that we, the United States, in an era of great competition, should no longer just leave Cyprus to Russian money launderers, and that we need to play an important part in trying to compete with Moscow in this European country. And so you see counteracting moves like lifting elements of the traditional arms embargo and trying to play a more prominent role. This isn't aimed at Turkey, but the effects are felt in Turkey and swirls around and contributes to this sort of internal narrative, which is very powerful, that somehow the MDCA is a ploy to invade southern Turkey. Again, complete nonsense, but nevertheless politically powerful in the country's domestic politics and nationalist media.
Looking ahead, Aaron, the growing U.S. presence in Greece and Cyprus comes as Turkey's behavior in the region has soured its relations with the U.S. and Europe. Where do you see Turkey fitting in as the U.S. looks to meet the key challenges we've been outlining?
He's a NATO ally. The peace isn't an if or or. The two countries are important to American national security. They are members of NATO. The U.S. has basing access in Turkey. Incirlik Air Force Base is a Turkish Air Force Base at which the United States has basing agreements. There's similar basing agreements at other Turkish bases. We don't deploy forces permanently in Turkey. We used to during the Cold War, but we do not. And so those basing access agreements aren't going away. For NATO contingencies, they're still there, right? Where we've run into trouble is basically since the 1950s, Turkey doesn't like when the United States wants to use its territory to project power into the Middle East. This has been a constant in Turkish foreign policy. This became a real acute issue in the war against ISIS, but for students of Turkish foreign policy, this should not have been a surprise. And so that is still going to continue, I would assume. And so rather than sit around and complain about it, which is what the tendency to do, is to begin to explore other options. And finally, we cannot ignore the way in which Turkish-Russian relations and the way in which Turkey prioritizes Russian economic investment in the country influences their security decision-making vis-a-vis Russia. And so if we assume that the Ukrainian war is going to stalemate, that's how most wars end up, we're still going to be in this period of heightened tension with the Russians. Moving forward, the Black Sea is going to be an important part of American/NATO security interests. And so exploring potential other places to watch Moscow, whether that be Romania or, like, again, linking the two seas, Black Sea and Mediterranean Sea, is something that a responsible government should be exploring, and why I laid out the piece.
Aaron, thanks for joining us on The Greek Current again. Great speaking with you as always.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
In other news, German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock on Friday criticized Turkey for disputing the sovereignty of Greek islands near its coastline. Greek islands, Lesbos, Chios, Rhodes, and many, many others are Greek territory, and no one has the right to raise questions over that, Baerbock said after talks in Athens with Foreign Minister Nikos Dendias. Baerbock traveled to Turkey after her meetings in Greece and met with Foreign Minister Cavusoglu in Istanbul. During a tense news conference, Cavusoglu urged Germany to not always side with Athens in disputes between Turkey and Greece. Baerbock also spoke out against Turkish plans to launch a new military offensive in northern Syria and was critical of a Turkish court ruling that convicted philanthropist Osman Kavala to life in prison. Finally, Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis pledged another €500 million in support to tackle the ongoing energy crisis on Thursday. Speaking at a cabinet meeting, he said that apart from the subsidies in August to the bills of households and businesses, another €500 million will be available from the windfall revenues of electricity producers that are now being transferred to the Energy Transition Fund. The government, he stressed, is also continuing to build fortifications against electricity price increases. We are essentially exhausting our fiscal margins, which are obviously increased and improved due to the good performance of the national economy, he said, noting that natural gas is 10 times more expensive than it was before this energy crisis started. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.